Chapter 24. Spinoza fought alongside Haesler, driving herself hard to keep somewhere close to his speed and power. She had forgotten just how arduous it was even to be in their presence, let alone attempt to accompany them into combat. They were phenomenal, of course, barely giving her or the others a chance to shoot. Spinoza felt all the old adulation rush back at once. They were like furnaces, driving all before them, never relenting, never stopping. They must have been running well within themselves in order to allow her and the others to keep up, but the pace was still staggering, and soon they were closing on the inner fortress.
"How long has it been like this?"
Haesler asked as he loped along, sounding appalled. "Unknown," Spinoza replied, panting. "Must have taken hold fast. They made no distress call." The sergeant grunted, clearly unimpressed.
"We nearly did not respond to you. 100 other cries have been issued, many of them critical."
"What is causing it?"
"Causes are your domain, interrogator," Haesler said. "We are here for what comes next."
They made their way further in, following the course that Kral must have taken. The cadavers never went away, still contorted into their various displays of agony, besmirched with signs and slogans daubed in their own blood. The same word was sprayed everywhere. The wound. The wound. The wound.
"My senses fail beyond this point," Haesler reported calmly as they sprinted down another long, echoing chamber. "What can you tell me?"
Spinoza began to struggle to match pace. Only her pride, her determination not to lose face before such warriors, kept her ploughing on.
"My master came this way,"
she said, sounding more certain than she felt. Just as she spoke, the floor beneath her rocked as if shaken by an earthquake. Debris streamed down from the roof, smashing apart as it hit the ground.
"Interrogator!"
Haesler cried, grabbing her and pulling her clear just as a huge crack zigzagged across the stone. The squad skidded to a halt, retreating from the widening chasm. One of Hessler's battle brothers grabbed a handled sensor device.
"Major tectonic activity. Imminent psionic rupture," he reported. "More shock waves incoming. The epicenter is directly ahead."
The sergeant put Spinoza down.
"It is unsafe to continue. We shall take it from here."
Spinoza stood her ground.
"He may yet be alive."
"I will not tell you again."
"You will not have to. I am coming."
The ground shook again, and a pillar cracked open, bisected from top to bottom. Further back, another shaft opened up, and flames shot out from the gap, thundering like gas plumes from a refinery chimney. The air around them suddenly shimmered, became denser, then shook back to normal, as if reality had briefly flexed.
Haesler laughed. "Come then."
And then they were moving again, all of them, sprinting through the hall as it steadily disintegrated around them. Huge flashes of blue-white light flared up out of nowhere, spinning into the chasms before erupting into snaking maelstroms. More pillars toppled, rupturing as they smashed into the rockcrete floor. The Space Marines formed up around Spinoza, Rivas, and the others, warding them from the worst of it. The confined space filled with dust, and the way ahead became even murkier than before. Explosions rang out, both ahead and behind them, shivering the bones of the fortress and sending blast waves racing down the narrow tunnels. The detonations were not just physical. Every impact brought a chorus of shrieks with it, coming from nowhere, sounding as if hundreds of voices, thousands of voices, were crying out in sudden and unbearable pain. The crystal walls blew apart, one by one, showering them all with spinning slivers. Of all of the non-Space Marines, Rivas seemed to be coping best. He was running harder now, looking as if he intended to break through the barriers ahead through force of will alone. Gorgias soared high above, driving his motive units hard, weaving between the falling wreckage. Spinoza felt as if her limbs would betray her at any moment, flooded with lactic acid and ready to give out. She barely noticed the destruction around her, only the way ahead, forged now by Haesler, and kept clear by his squad. Eventually, they broke into another long hall with galleries set high on either side. The checkerboard floor had erupted, and whole ranks of statues had collapsed into rocking chunks. Snaking lines of force lapped and whipped across the far wall, illuminating heaps of blood-drenched bodies amid the widening cracks. Some still lived and shrieked when they saw the Space Marines break in. A few tried to summon up some kind of defensive power, but with the Eldritch forces now running wild and unrestrained, they were torn apart as soon as they raised their arms. Hessler reached the siege doors. The brace columns on either side of them were shaking, and spiderwebs of tiny cracks ran across the reinforced armor of the outer surface. The entire space vibrated, shaking like chaff in a thresher. Spinoza hauled in painful breaths, dropping to one knee. Her vision was blurred, and when she blinked, she saw, alternately, both Crowl and the Xenos staring back at her from the bleary shadows.
"They are in there,"
she panted, stating the obvious out of sheer desperation. There was no time. The outer fortress was falling apart, and this door had been made to keep the world at bay. Hessler studied it for a split second.
"Stand back,"
he ordered, waving his own squad to withdraw. He took up a number of charges from his belt, melter bombs from their look, and mag-clamped them to the door seal. Then he pulled back alongside the rest of them. All of them, stormtroopers included, trained their weapons on the same point, readying themselves for the timed explosions. Spinoza looked up above. More debris was now falling from the roof. The floor rippled like water, and the screaming was getting worse. Whatever was causing this was already well underway, building up to its inevitable crescendo.
"We are too late," she murmured,
watching the runes on the melter bombs spin down to zero.
"For the love of the throne, we are here too late."
The air exploded. It kindled, flashed, sparked, then blew apart. The master reeled suddenly, and Sanguine, free of his control, clanked to the ground. He staggered, falling back towards the spur's edge, just as the psychers in the chamber, one by one, began to erupt. Crowl was felled too, hurled back down onto his knees. The spur shook, feeling for a moment like it might snap off and tumble into the gulf below. He went after his revolver, but missed it, his vision blurring. The screams were everywhere now, inside his head, inside the sphere, swilling around, spilling over, deafening and unending. He saw lines of black force shoot across the sphere's heart, snapping into the orb and sending it dark. Flames rushed across the chamber's zenith, chewing through the throne set into the curving walls, immolating them in bursts of shattered metal.
"Khazad!"
he yelled, feeling as if the world were tilting away into the abyss. From the corner of his eye, he saw that the resonance had been thrown aside too, and now tottered on the edge of the spur. The assassin only needed a fraction of a second, freed of the psychic lock. She pounced, launching a flying kick at the woman and sending her sailing out into the seething ocean of burning souls. The surviving guards went after her, and Khazad swung around to take them on. That left the master. Crowl grabbed Sanguine, clutched it in his shaky fist, and fired. The shot went wide, disappearing into the gathering inferno, and Frank regained his poise. One faltering step at a time, he advanced on Crowl.
"This delegation," Crowl demanded, firing again. "Where did you send them?"
Frank held up a palm, and the bullet exploded before reaching him, showering them both in fragments.
"Beyond help,"
the master said, pulling a power blade from his belt. His outline shook with what looked like a heat haze, and the blade's disruptor flare pulled around him in wild tendrils. The air fizzed with psionic charge, kindling without warning, causing the air to sizzle and pop. Making aggressive use of the warp now was perilous. The combatants were reduced to the physical, even as the very elements of reality turned into hellish plasma around them. Crowl snarled, launching himself at Frank, his free gauntlet curling into a fist. He struck out, and the master parried with a knife, catching Crowl's hand and snapping it back. Crowl punched out with Sanguine's heel, catching Frank in the ribs and knocking him, staggering back towards the edge. The master dropped down to his knees against the pull of the flying energies. As he did so, the orb above them suddenly shrank radically, imploding into itself as if caught by some psychic black hole. The air in the chamber howled after it, sucking inward towards the rapidly blackening heart, and dark lightning blades leapt out from the sphere's edge. The screams became ear-burstingly unbearable. Kral shot a pained glance back towards Khazad, seeing that the assassin had dispatched the last of the guards. She swiveled on her heel, riding the surge of the unnatural winds, and galloped towards him. Frank struggled back to his feet, facing them both. His coat rippled around him, pressed flat against his body.
"You can still redeem this!" Kral shouted. "Tell me where you sent them! Tell me what they took!"
The master tensed, ready for the coming impacts.
"You are a persistent man," he cried. "Too persistent."
Kral fired a third time as the master lunged again, hitting him in the chest and blowing a long line of blood out the other side. That barely slowed him, and Frank slashed the power blade across Kral's helm, driving the metal in. His vision dissolving into bloody blotches, Kral reeled away, dropping Sanguine, only for Khazad to barrel into the master, yelling Shoba curses so loudly that they were audible over the roaring tumult around them. Half stunned, Kral scrambled after his weapon. He never got the chance to pick it up. The black orb at the heart of the sphere suddenly pulsed, shuddered, then blew out. A thunderclap rang out across the gulf, shattering every remaining light point across the crystal's edge. The screams extinguished. The fires guttered away. The psychic pressure accelerated into excruciating density before it, too, blasted into nothingness. Blackness fell, as complete and choking as the void itself, broken only by the racing tongues of fire still guttering amid the preternatural hurricane. Kral cried aloud, his back arching, watching as iron fragments, thrones, tiaras, bolts blasted across the void and rained down from the sphere's zenith. He crawled forward through the shadow, on his knees again, watching as the dark profiles of the master and Khazad struggled desperately on the spur's edge, backlit by driving flame. With the beacon's destruction, the sense of loss was suddenly agonizing, as if a chunk of his soul had been wrenched from his body, leaving only a shallow husk behind. They were still fighting, the two of them, their limbs blurred amid the driving rain of iron flecks. The master had his blade, but Khazad had her armored hands, and it wasn't clear which would prove decisive. Snarling through the pain, Kral pushed himself up onto all fours and scrabbled along the spur, closing in, going for Frank's trailing leg. As he did so, the final shockwave from the pulsar's demise hit the spur, rupturing the stone surface and making it bounce like a storm-blown branch. Both Khazad and the master were thrown from their feet, their momentum carrying them out over the edge. With a sudden burst of clarity, Kral knew he could still reach them. His first thought was Frank. He could grab the master, haul him back, get the answers he so desperately needed. His legs kicked straight, and he threw himself forward, his chest slamming into the stone floor. His left hand shot out, grasping an armored wrist as it slithered down the steep rocky drop. Shouting aloud from the pain, Kral lodged his other hand into a crack in the rock, bracing against the stone, and pulled hard. For a moment, as the suspended body thudded against the overhang, he thought his spine would crack. His shoulder shrieked with pain, taking the full weight. If he had not been wearing his armor, no doubt the bone would have sprung from the socket. He held on, breathing through gritted teeth. Wincing, he started to pull. Slowly, agonizingly, he dragged the dead weight back from the edge. It worked. Khazad managed to get a foothold down below, somehow, and gradually reappeared over the rock's lip. Once she had hauled herself over the spur's edge, the two of them rolled onto their backs, panting hard. Kral stared up at the zenith of the sphere. Flecks of smouldering metal were still drifting. The screams had all gone now, snuffed out with the extinguishing of the beacon's power. Everything hurt. He could taste his own blood against his teeth. His lungs felt as if they had been scraped internally by a blunt razor. Khazad was the first to recover the power of speech.
"Thought you would go for him," she gasped.
It took Kral a while to be able to respond.
"Changed my mind," he whispered. "Khatach once, now Saijan."
She chuckled painfully. After a while, she managed to get up. The rain of burning metal continued steadily, a scatter of dull red sparks against the darkening globe. Tremors still rumbled below them, and smoke was pouring out of the exit tunnel.
"Think you can go back in there?" she asked, concerned.
Crowl lifted his head painfully. He wasn't even sure he could get back to his feet. His shoulder was surely broken. His skull had been cut open where the master had slashed against his helm. It was a struggle just to remain conscious. What did it matter, anyway? The quest had been in vain. Frank had achieved what he had set out to do. His forces had left Terra, carrying with them all that was needed to make the contract irreversible. The beacon was extinguished. Everything had failed. The wound had come to the throne world, and the fury of the end times rode on the hems of its ragged, death-stained cloak. He was about to tell her that, and advise her to make her own way back alone, if she wished to, when he spied movement amid the smoke. At first, he thought it must be one of the corrupted, staggering out of the hell they had created, and ready to impose the final indignity. When he saw the first golden-yellow armor profile break out from the swirls of roiling black. He let his head crack weakly back against the stone.
"Spinoza,"
he croaked, smiling bleakly under his ruined helm.